everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against and make us ask to win. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the Tide, Honey Badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, powered by Bama Hammer. Perception, perception, perception. The beauty of this game is in the eye of the beholder. Tom, what dost thou behold?
Man, I bought a lot of Alabama players laying on their back on the field. Our doctors got overtime, man. They got time and a half in this football game. I'm used to seeing a well-conditioned Alabama team watch other players, you know, clap as other players go to the sideline. I lost count with all the guys that we had go down, man. This is not the way you won a game against the Catamounts before you play your in-state rival.
No, it's not. And these Catamounts, they bring out the injury bug with us. Wasn't it Brody Croyle who broke his knee against Western Carolina several years ago? This team seems to bring it out. It was very frustrating. At one play, we've got two offensive linemen definitely down on the ground. I would jokingly say that the trainer gets a mini game ball, but you know, that's never what we want to see. And you know, at one point it was like, can we just double the check that we're going to write you guys and let's call this done? Because you know, the rate of attrition here, you know, was not sustainable.
Now, I was just going to say that one play where those two offensive linemen went down on the same play. You know, we haven't seen that in a while where we got two Alabama players both on their back. And I was like, wow, man, this is getting ugly fast.
Yeah, when I saw that, there's a part of me that just wanted to turn the TV off and say, well, you know, maybe I'm jinxing it by watching or something, because, you know, this is, never really had any concern that we were going to lose the game. But, you know, you got so many players going down that, you know, it really puts jeopardy with what we can accomplish this season. You know, we'll talk about Auburn a little bit and what could be around the corner. But, you know, you lose some critical guys in this game, a game that, you know, we went on to win and went on to put up pretty good numbers. But some of the injuries, fortunately, some of the reports out from practice are generally positive. But, you know, we seem to come out very lackadaisical in this game. And, you know, why don't you pick out a couple things on offense and let's kind of talk through them. What did you see, good or bad, on offense?
You know, I guess the first thing that really jumped out to me was probably, you know, I guess was probably the play of Chris Black. You know, I know he didn't start the game. He got a lot of his work in the second half, but I really thought that he made some good plays. I thought they used him to drag him behind the line of scrimmage, a la Chris John Jones. He seemed to come in and play the role that our Darius Stewart was playing in the first half, and made some difficult catches and fought for yards. And he's a kid that I'd like to see on the field more.
Yeah, you've been calling for Chris Black a lot, and you know, he had his first 100-yard day, so he definitely put up some good numbers. You know, there was a lot of youth that was served. I like seeing our Darius get some run. I especially liked the play of Tyron Jones, 11 carries, 75 yards, and a touchdown. He looked, he just looked very patient, just incredible vision to pick his holes, to work and weave throughout traffic. And then when he got a burst, there were a couple times it looked like in the way he sort of demonstrated himself at the end of a carry, that he was just a step away from breaking a couple of long runs. And I know you got to give, you got to consider the opponent, but man, he looks like he has a lot of promise.
Well, he just, for a guy his size, right? I mean, he's a guy that, you know, he doesn't run like a 5'9", you know, 200-pound guy. You know, he doesn't have thick legs. He's not a bowling ball, but his legs don't stop. He's constantly churning those legs, constantly fighting for yards. You know, he definitely shows that he needs to be the number three guy right now. I did enjoy seeing Tenpenny. I'm glad, you know, we talked about who was going to get the carries. Well, you know, we even gave Jostin Fowler five carries that we can talk about in a minute. But weren't you surprised, given what had happened the week before? Are you surprised out of 45 carries that Tenpenny got 11 of them? I didn't think he'd see the ball that many times.
No, I'm not surprised. I know that we wanted to throw the ball around a little bit, especially I think we should have started the game running the ball a lot more. They were down two defensive tackles. They were playing two freshmen defensive tackles. We should have just lined up and pulled some plays from the Stallings playbook and just tried to pound them, because I think we just could have beaten them into submission. We, you know, that coin kind of flipped on us when we had some injury, most notably, you know, Cooper, but then Stewart gets hurt as well. I think at some point we had to start passing the ball a little bit more to give some of the younger guys some run in the passing game. You know, Cameron Sims and Robert Foster probably saw more, and Chris Black probably saw more time passing the ball than we would have seen had it not been for the injuries of the wide receiver. And that's sort of a pet theory that I have, that when we should have run the ball, we didn't. We passed. And then when we could have run the ball more, we didn't, because we needed to see some of the younger guys run routes, because we didn't know what we were going to have available to us the rest of the season. That's sort of a pet theory that I have. I don't know if you have any thought or reaction to that.
No, I definitely think that we should have run the ball more. I think we were too cutesy at the beginning of the game. You know, I guess a couple things I will mention to that regard is, you know, we had the third and goal play in the first quarter, where we were at the 3 yard line, and Blake Sims fakes the ball to Henry, you know, going to the right. David, he had two linemen pulled ahead of him, including Fowler, to make it three, to block one DB. I could have scored that touchdown on the right end. Instead, he chose to keep the ball around the left end and, you know, gets no yards. And Saban is lighting up Lane Kiffin and Blake Sims when he comes off the sideline. I think we just got a little too cute for our britches at the beginning of this ball game, because, you know, to your point, we had been, you know, running the ball very effectively on that drive. We had short field position. You know, we should have just simply pounded the ball. Second and goal at the three, we try to throw the ball. Third and goal at the three, we try to throw the ball. And instead, we only get a field goal out of that in that first quarter.
Yeah, that was frustrating. What did you think about when Cameron Robinson went down, some of the rotation that we did at the left tackle? I think we brought immediately off the bench, we brought Dominic Jackson into that position, which was interesting. But then coming out of halftime, we kind of put Austin Shepherd over at the left guard, and then we kind of ran some combination of Grant Hill at the right tackle, and I think Dominic Jackson got some run over there as well. What do you think about how we responded to Cam going down at the left tackle spot?
Well, you're definitely reading my notes, which is not possible because you're in a different part of the country than I am currently. But that was my next example. I thought that was one of the keys of this football game. Is we had just, you know, Derrick Henry had just fumbled on the 12-yard line, giving them a short field to make it a 17-14 game. And Cam Robinson goes down on a third and one at their 38. And so I thought this was one of the keys to the game. I thought this is where Coach Saban was like, I don't care who just got hurt. We're going for it on fourth and one, and we're going to exert our will over Western Carolina, the Catamounts, and we're going to get this game going where it needs to be going. And so I think it was huge on that play that he actually put Austin Shepherd at left tackle. Excuse me, he did an unbalanced line on that play. And so he had Dominic Jackson at left tackle, but he had Austin Shepherd outside of Dominic Jackson. So he had Airy, Dominic, and Austin Shepherd, and then he brought in Brandon Green. And so he overloaded the beef on the left side there and said, by damn, we're getting a yard, period.
Right.
We're getting a yard. We're Alabama.
Here's where we're running the, here's where we're running the ball. Dare to stop it.
And Derrick Henry proceeded to get 6 yards there. And I really think that gave them a little kick in the butt that they needed to, you know, to get things going in this football game. And I thought that was huge because, to your point, we just lost our left tackle. And he said, screw it. We're still running to the left. I don't care.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think that one, you know, we've talked about definitely Kiffin having free run over the play calling. If there were a single play all season where maybe that wasn't true, I would point to that one, because I don't see it in Kiffin, just because we haven't seen it this season, where we're gonna trot out an unbalanced line, such an obvious run jumbo package. That's a super jumbo package, and then run right behind it. I've not seen us do anything so pronounced, so obvious in the alignment that. You know, as we've done there. And I think that was Saban's doing. We're going to line up, we're going to get this first down, and then we're just going to, and it did seem to flip the switch of the team. You know, the whole persona of the team seemed to change at that point. And of course, you know, the game was in hand. Anything else on offense that you saw that really jumped out at you?
Yeah, I just think that, well, a couple different things. First of all, I think our Darius Stewart was, you know, before he got hurt, was getting used in a very versatile way. You know, the announcers said a la Kenyon Drake, and I think that's true.
Sure.
Stewart was lining up in the slot. He was lining up at the line of scrimmage. He was lining up as a H-back. He was motioning to the right, motioning to the left. It's interesting, you know, what they've done over the past couple weeks in practice with him, number one. Number two, and I think if you look at the guy, right, he does have some of the skill set than Kenyon Drake. Even his build even looks like a Kenyon Drake. But I think when Amari Cooper went down on that play, and let me just say real quick, DBs out there, learn how to tackle. You know, you hear me complain all the time that the back four don't know how to tackle. They tackle like girls. They either just, you know, bump them on the shoulder to the side, or then they try to dive at their legs. Well, you and I saw Julio Jones get hurt the same way when a guy put his helmet on a player's knee. And so had that guy tackled Amari Cooper the way football players tackle, Amari Cooper would have never gotten banged up. But I think after Amari Cooper went out, I think it kind of forced Blake Sims to do some things that he's not used to doing, which is looking for, you know, his safety blanket was gone. And he had to suddenly start going through his progressions. And the biggest thing that jumped out to me was that you've got a young kid in there in Cam Sims and our Darius Stewart. And a couple times they were running routes. One of them was doing wrong. Who knows which one, right? But they were right on top of each other. And so I was surprised with DeAndre White not playing and Amari Cooper having just gone down. I'm surprised that Blake Sims did not look to the senior leadership of Christian Jones with the ball, and instead we were going so heavy to the young guys. That just kind of surprised me.
Well, you know, of the 11 guys who caught passes, Christian Jones caught one this week, but he had one for 11. And you know, to your point with you know, DeAndre out, and of course Yeldon was out too, and so you could reason that contributes to the offense being a little off kilter. You know, I don't know how strong of a case you'd have there, but you would think that you would go with the ball more frequently to Christian Jones, that he would be, especially once Cooper goes down. You know, it seems that Sims has an affinity for Chris Black, which is interesting. I think some of that goes back. We saw that a lot last year. I think some of that goes back to their time on the practice squad. So at least he was able to find and use him. But I would have expected more from Christian Jones. And you know, kind of back to your point with our Darius and Cam Sims kind of literally running into each other. And that, I think, led to the interception that Sims had. It makes you wonder if that's why we're not seeing – you know, we've been asking, where are these guys? Where are these guys? Well, I wonder if that's where they are. They're not learning the route tree, the route combinations. And so when they get out there, they run into each other. You know, that's a quick way to find the sideline if that's what we're seeing a lot of in practice.
No, absolutely. And I will say that, you know, Saban, switching gears to injuries for a quick second, you know, Saban's real coy. He doesn't like to talk about this kind of stuff. And so, you know, he only mentioned Brian Vogler and Ardarius Stewart, but he said, you know, we'll see how the rest of them progress through the week. Well, I'm just going to tell you that of those players, I think Brian Vogler is a biggie. Because Brian Vogler is the closest thing we have to the set of Michael Williams. And Brian Vogler helps that running game go at the line of scrimmage. And no offense to O.J. Howard or Dakota Ball or Ty Flourney Smith, but they don't make the running game go the way Brian Vogler does. And so I was happy that Brian Vogler had finally started coming back after the past couple weeks. And yep. That injury concerns me.
Well, he's a guy that you wonder, why would we not hold him out in this kind of game? Because he has been struggling. But, you know, we could say that about a lot of different guys, I guess. But I think the statement, and I kind of underscore what you say here, Brian Vogler is probably the best player that no one knows who he is on the
yes.
team. And in terms of what he can contribute and what he does. So, yeah, I'm kind of surprised that Flourney Smith, that we're not seeing more of him. I don't know that he saw action in the game. He certainly didn't catch a pass. Fakane caught a pass. I guess I was a little bit surprised by that. We went to Howard a couple of times, which is good to see him involved, but, you know, it's almost too little too late, I think, at this point. I was glad
we should have seen, to your point, we should have seen a heavy dose of Brandon Green and Dakota Ball instead of Brian Vogler. There was no need for Brian Vogler to be in that football game.
Right.
Not with what you've got laying ahead 7 days later.
No, and there just the myriad of injuries that he's had. And I understand a competitor wants to play. You know, if you would have let DeAndre White play and if you would have let T.J. Yeldon play, they would have played, right? If you would have yet let some of those guys come back, you know, after injury that the coach says could have come back, they would have played. A competitor wants to play. I understand that. Sometimes you have to protect them from themselves. And Vogler, to me, seems like would have been a candidate. And again, you could say this about a lot of guys, but, you know, Vogler, I think the case is there that, you know, hey, he's already banged up. He's already, you know, struggling to kind of make it through the week. Dude, let's get you another day of rest. Let's not re-aggravate anything. And sure enough, what do? We go out and re-aggravate something. So, you know, and he and Ardarius are the most questionable for, you know, coming up. And so that's where it's a little bit frustrating. Ardarius probably had one of his better games in terms of the responsibilities that he was given. And if Vogler may be playing a game that you could argue he shouldn't have been playing. So that's a little frustrating. I was glad to see the walk-on. I'm going to butcher his name, but Michael Nicewander, man, I'm going to just slay his name. But he had a nice catch for a touchdown. Looked really good, you know, kind of looking the ball in, tucking it away, and it's going to touchdown. It was good to see the rest of the team sort of celebrate with him. It wasn't just he didn't just celebrate with sort of the other walk-ons you know, some of the frontline guys were there celebrating with him.
T.J. Yeldon was one of the first ones to come up to the sideline when he came off.
Yeah, and so that's something that speaks to team chemistry. You know, when a walk-on's going to score, of course, all of the other walk-ons, he is the embodiment of sort of a walk-on program, right? And so all the other walk-ins are going to be excited. But it's easy to have on a team, you know, two classes, you know, the scholarship class and the walk-on class. And a lot of times the intermingle may not be there. But on this team, it looks like that's not so much the case, that there was a lot of celebration and satisfaction across the team that he had an opportunity to score. So hats off to him. That's, you know, everyone has a chance to compete and play, but, you know, it's something special for a walk-on to get to do that. So hats off to Michael.
No, absolutely. What was your take on the play of Jacob Coker? I credit Saban for having Coker start the second half. You know, you and I have asked for that on games in the past. This might be the first time against an opponent like this that we've seen it, right? How many times have we said that, you know, we'd like the, you know, it's a good transition point to let the backup come in at the start of the second half. You know, I point to one third down completion that he had to Chris Black across the middle, where Chris Black was obviously his second or third progression. And he hit him in stride on a laser pass that just looked really, really good. I know that there's some other things that he still needs to work on. But he does seem to have a little more command of the offense now than he did.
Yeah, he really did. I expected Sims to come back and the starters to come back at half. And I know we've called for it and we don't get it. I wonder if Saban said, "Fooey on this. We're getting the starters out." And, you know, when I, you know,
enough injuries. Yep.
Yeah. I know that I have my typical script, but I'm going to set that down and we're going to do something different here in the second half because we can't afford to have some of these guys hurt. It looked like a couple times slick turf, you know, Sims a couple times just fell down. He made a couple of plays where it looked like, you know, a foot slip, you know, he could have potentially been injured. So I wonder if coach didn't say, you know, we're just bringing in the backups. I think Coker looked, I'm going to say two things that are contradictory. I don't mean them that way, but I think Coker looked sharp. He was 12 of 18, 115 for a touch. At the same time, he seemed to have, when the camera focused on him, he just seemed to be, you know, wide eyed. You know, his play didn't suggest it as much, but when the camera looked at him, he just looked like he had deer in the headlights. So I don't know if that's just, you know, how he looks during the game. I don't know if he's still, you know, because this is the first prolonged action he's had in what, month now. So
right.
I don't know if there's a little bit of nerves there. This is a game where he knew that he was going to come in and get a couple of possessions. And so there's the pressure that comes with that. I thought he acquitted himself well, but I thought he looked like a guy, although he looked more comfortable than he had earlier in the season, he looked like a guy that it wasn't his team. And guess what? It's not. And so had he played all season, you know, he would look more comfortable. But, you know, clearly, you know, and I'm not trying to revive that discussion, Sims won the starting job.
Sure.
I'm just saying that Coker has the opportunity to really build on this experience, and you know he'll be the front runner in the competition going into spring drills.
Well, it was, and that's true. That third and nine he did at the beginning of the fourth quarter, where he hit Chris Black on a deep cross for 26 yards. That was just a thing of beauty. I mean, that was just a rocket arm between the hashes, and that's not a throw that we're gonna get from Blake Sims right now. Plain and simple. It's just not a throw we're not going to get from him.
Yeah.
I will tell you, though, just like I would be frustrated with the play calling when Blake Sims is in there, I do want to point out on the first drive Jacob Coker was in the game in the third quarter, we're driving down the field pretty easily with Tyron Jones. We've got a third and seven at the 10, and Coker throws the ball in the flats, in the left flats at the line of scrimmage to Malcolm Faishon for a loss of 1 yard.
Yes.
Okay. On first down, he was late on a slant pass in the end zone to Robert Foster. But my question there is on third and seven at the 10, let the kid take another shot in the end zone, try to build his confidence, try to let the second offense. Now, granted, you were talking about, you know, running the number twos in there. The first string line was still in there with Coker, which is interesting, right? He didn't want Coker to get hurt, which is why Brian Vogler got hurt, right? Because Brian Vogler was in there on that first drive in the third quarter when he went down. Well, are you surprised on third and seven there that he's throwing out there in the flats to the line of scrimmage as opposed to letting him take a strike in the end zone there?
Well, yeah, if that's the called play, and you know, without having gone back and watched that a couple of times, you know, I wonder if the intended receiver wasn't someone else, and they were just covered right at the line, and he went to the check down maybe quicker than he should have. There's going to be a world of sort of sequential information there that that we may never know, right? But it could be that someone else was the number one receiver. He saw that he was covered up in tight coverage and just immediately went to the check down, which makes it look like that was the call play. So I don't know, absent my knowledge of that, but sort of bottom line, yeah, that's not where you want to go with the ball. That's not the first place you want to go with the ball. That maybe is your third read, but that shouldn't be your first or second read.
And maybe it's more of a factor of he just gave up on it a little early, possibly. That is possibly what happened. Well, hey, who gets your mini game ball on offense?
Yeah, I'm giving mini game ball on offense to Cameron Sims. I like the way at times he looked, and he saw some growing up. And he's only a true freshman, but he had three catches, had a touchdown, and had a very nice on one of Henry's runs. Had a very nice block. Took on a safety that was a little bit bigger than he was, and allowed the running back to get in behind him. So I thought he played really well. I think there's a lot of promise that Cameron Sims has. So he gets my mini game ball.
All right. Well, since you couldn't do it, I'm going to take care of it for you. My mini game ball is going to go to Mr. Michael Nicewander.
There you go.
For the reasons that you mentioned, he's the true embodiment of our mini game ball. He got a lot of play in the second half, Hoover High School graduate from a great football program in Hoover, Alabama. And for the reasons you said, just very happy for the kid to get probably the only touchdown of his career in this football game.
Look at you on the all pronunciation team. Sean hey, and Nicewander, man.
Hey, flip the field to defense, man. How cringing with all the guys going down hurt. How cringing were you when you saw the stupid chop block from the two offensive linemen on A'shaun Robinson?
Well, and it was frustrating. They did it again with D-liner. He wasn't dinged. But, yeah, that's kind of frustrating that they would do that.
It was pretty blatant, too. I mean, my question to you was, were you just saying, oh my gosh, this is, cause every guy that went down was like, these are guys that we can't afford to lose. Right. Sorry on the defense, he's a TJ Yeldon of the defense, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's a big old body and he's an important player and, he's continued to improve and play well all season. So yeah, I hated to see him, go down. I know he got dinged up in fall camp and we kind of brought him along slowly from there. I'm hoping that he can recover quickly and be ready to go. Yeah, that was a little frustrating. They did it again against D-liner. Again, he didn't get hurt, but if they did it twice and were flagged, they probably did it three or four more times and a little more discreet, probably got away with it. But that's a dangerous block. I know it used to just be how you block, but that's a dangerous block, and you can really get somebody hurt in a bad way in that situation. So I'm just glad that none of our guys got injured any more significantly than they were, with those kind of blocking.
If I'm Coach Saban, I'm like, look, we gave you $500,000 2 years ago. We're giving you $500,000 today. If you want to ever see $500,000 again in Bryant Denny, you better stop that crap.
No chop block when you come here, right? It does make you wonder, right? If you get if you can have those kinds of stipulations and those kind of contracts.
I mean, come on. I know those guys were getting manhandled by A'shaun and Jaron Reed all day, but come on. What else jumped out at you on defense?
Two things I would say really jumped out at me. One of them, the bottom line is we only allowed 23 yards rushing. And that is pretty darn significant. I think
13,
it was
on 13 carries, David. 13 carries, mind you. That makes it even sound better, right?
Yeah, I think that they went to try to do some matchups more in the passing game and had some incremental success there. But the fact that we held them to 23 yards rushing, the fact that we were able to really slow down the Mississippi State rushing attack. I like, kind of back to back how that stands up his preparation for Auburn. We talked about, you know, we've talked about the difference in sort of these spread attack teams, and some teams are spread pass teams, and some teams are spread running teams. And Auburn, I think, is more of the running variety. And so the fact that we've had, we've played a number of up-tempo teams this season, and it kind of back-to-back, we've played some up-tempo teams that are more inclined or, you know, or at least going to bring some running with a mobile quarterback. And the fact that, you know, I don't know if I want to say shut them down, but 23 yards rushing, I guess that is shutting down the Western Carolina. Dak had a few more yards than that, you know, right at the 90-something yards. But it speaks to success up front against these type of teams, and we're going to need that against Auburn. So I think that's one of the big takeaways I have from defense is you know, the, you know, we only allow 221 yards passing, right? And if you take the 14 points, you could say that we gave them 14 points, but, you know, one was an inadvertent whistle on a fumble. That should have been our ball. And absolutely, the other, you know, they got the ball on a fumble. And if you go back and look at their reception, you could reason that maybe he didn't possess the ball through the, you know, through the full reception, and that maybe that one shouldn't have counted either. And so that's, you know, to me, that's kind of interesting. You know, they were right there with 14 points and we only had 17 points, but you could make a case that, you know, maybe they should only have had, you know, 3 or 7 or, you know, points in that kind of ballpark.
No, absolutely. I was going to ask you about that call where they got to keep the ball here in just a minute, but going back to your run comment, out of the 13 carries, 6 came from the quarterback, and those were not, you know, some of those were just scrambles that, you know, turned into rushing, you know, plays. I think they abandoned the run pretty quickly.
Sure.
You know, 2 of those runs were at the end of the half when they were just running the clock out. And yep. So I think they realized very quickly that running the ball is not going to work on these guys. And our strength is to try to their longest run from carry from a running back was 4 yards, and their quarterback had 1 draw play for 8 yards, and so that was, they had 2 runs out of 13 where they really did anything. What did you think about the inadvertent whistle? You know, that's a frustrating rule that the offense can decide what they want to do there. You know, I'd hate to be that official that was tooting on that whistle when he shouldn't have been.
Yeah, it is, you know, that is a frustrating rule. I agree with you there. You know, you saw Trey Aprice pick it up and kind of act tentative with it, acting like maybe the play was over, but, you know, kind of play continued. But, you know, clearly there was a whistle, and the fact that saved them from a turnover, that's pretty darn frustrating. And, you know, of course, they did what a good team does, and they turned that into points. They didn't just die on the vine there, but they converted that into points. And relative to sort of the history of their program you know, in their league, they are a good team. And so they were able to capitalize on that situation. That was certainly frustrating. But, yeah, that official, you think of an experienced SEC crew, that's a pretty Bush League mistake to be early on a whistle like that. That to me is Bush League. The whistle wasn't like while the play was, you know, kind of still going on. The ball was on the ground. The ball, you know, was on the ground at the point of the whistle. And you think, well, you know, the place, you could say, you know, if the play is going to stop at the whistle, then, you know, it's Alabama ball. And so that they get, you know, a governor's reprieve on that possession, that's just frustrating. And that's something, yeah, I wouldn't want to be that crewman that did that. And, you know, I think he's going to get some talking to about that, because that's pretty bad. That's doing your job pretty poorly there.
No, absolutely. What do you think about their passing game? You know, that kid Benson had 9 catches for 118 yards, but they seem to be choosing to pick on Cyrus Jones. you know, I didn't go back and look at the distribution of how many passes, you know, went Eddie Jackson's way versus Cyrus. But, you know, right out of the gates, you know how most offenses are scripting their first plays, right? Well, after that inadvertent whistle, three plays later, you know, sideline pass to Kay Benson for 21 yards against Cyrus. The very next play, sideline pass to Kay Benson for 31 yards to the nine against Cyrus. So he got two catches back to back on that first drive. He got 52 yards of his 118 yards on two plays on the opening drive. And, you know, that's what they scripted. So I just find it interesting that they were going after Cyrus, you know, out of the gate in this ball game.
Yeah, they certainly made a point of doing that. And you know, it's a little frustrating for me because I think he's played well, but this may have been his worst game. He didn't turn to the ball as much as he could have. You know, certainly I know not enough for you. And he certainly got caught up and just flat got beat a couple times. That was frustrating. They did go after Eddie a couple times, and I think they beat him a little bit as well. They knew who they wanted to go after, and they had some pretty good success going after him. You know, we certainly have to know that Auburn's going to do that as well. They're going to look at and every team's going to look on who they can pick on, who's the weakness. You know, our pass defense, I think this season has been pretty good, but at the same time, I think that there's opportunities back there, and this team seemed to call out a couple of them.
Well, it just made me wonder with them scripting those plays that's where they chose to go with the ball. So that was just an interesting choice there on their part. What else jumped out at you on defense? I'm probably going to ruin your mini game ball, but did you like to see the aggressiveness of Frazier when he got in there and made that play?
Yeah, I really did. I really like the youngster in there. I like the Rashawn Evans and Tim Jackson getting in there, or Tim Williams rather, getting in there and getting after the quarterback. I like the emotion that Tim demonstrated. And Tim actually split a double team to make the play. And had he, you know, kind of been held up and not gotten through, you know, Rashad Evans was right there to get the play. And so they were both sort of meeting at the quarterback, if you will. And so I like seeing both of those guys out there. There were a couple times that, I'm going to talk about DePriest and Ragland. Just, you know, what's the difference between an FBS team and, you know, a team like Alabama? There were a couple tackles. There were a couple hits that DePriest and Ragland hit that just demonstrated the difference in physicality. Ragland is, I mean, he's a big boy and he's going to knock some people down, but, you know, he's hit some SEC running backs and it's been a collision. He hit the runner for West Carolina a couple times, and it was just like going through a paper mache doll. It was like running through, you know, the sheet of paper that the cheerleaders hold up that the teams run through. I mean, he just ran through the guy and sent the guy flying. And so that difference in physicality to me was really stark in a couple of the plays there by those big linebackers.
No, absolutely. What did you think about the amount of work that Geno got? Apparently, Jarrett Williams got banged up in the game, and that's why we didn't see him as much. That obviously gave Geno Smith some more run.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because Jarrett looked like he started the game, and I thought, well, that's interesting because Geno played so well, and I thought the defense played so, played better with him in the game. Last week and Dak is a running quarterback. And so you think with this quarterback, you know, why would you switch, and not have, have Jarek in there instead of Geno? But, Jarek looked good. And then I thought Geno came in and he looked good too. I still think for all that we've seen from Jarek and him look really comfortable at times, I still kind of pound the drum for Geno. If he were getting all of these reps, I think we, you know, all season, I think he would look as comfortable, more comfortable, and I think we'd be getting some big plays out of him. So I'm never going to root for injury. I'm never going to kind of go that angle. But, you know, all things being equal, I would much rather see Geno out there. And so if this gives him an opportunity to be out there, then to me, it's different. You know, if Jarek's going to get hurt, which, I'm not rooting for that, but if he's going to get hurt and we bring Geno in, I think that we've actually improved at that position. Whereas, you know, if an Achon goes out and we have to bring, you know, Brandon Ivory in, you know, we've taken a step back at that position.
No, that's fair. Anything else jumped out at you on defense? You know, I noticed Dylan Lee back out there, man. He must be the cat with nine lives. How do you walk off? How do you get assisted off the field 2 weeks in a row like you can't walk? And then the very next week you're back out there.
Yeah, he's got the knees of Rasputin or something, because I mean, it looks like he's done you know,
for the season.
Yeah. And you know, and then, you know, he's right back out there, and in one of those games he was right back out in the same game, and so hey, I'm glad that he's getting the run and that he's not hurt and lost in that way. But, you know, those seem to be pretty significant injuries that he's having, at least in appearance, and he bounces, you know, right back from them. So, yeah, I'm glad to see that. And, you know, I think I kind of kidded to myself. He made a play and I thought, well, he made a play and didn't get carted off, so that's good. yeah. Yeah.
Well, I definitely enjoyed seeing D Liner out there. He's a guy I'd like to get some run. I enjoyed seeing Josh Frazier out there. You know, I enjoyed seeing Deshaun Hand out there. I think we did a good job on defense, more so than offense, of running a bunch of guys out there and getting some run in a game like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what else on defense, or do you want to carry so many game ball?
Well, real quick, before I carry too many game balls, I did want to ask you very quickly, flip the field back to offense for a second. You know, Alfonso Taylor and Leon Brown was in a struggle, right, as to who was going to be the starter. And Leon Brown went down on that same play that Cam did. Were you surprised that, given that, you know, given everything we've talked about with injuries, Leon Brown, not only did he not come out that play, but he didn't come out anymore, right, until halfway through the third quarter? Are you surprised Alfonso didn't come in earlier there when there was a chance that Leon was hurt?
Well, you know, I'm going to say no, and I'm going to base that on, you know, he, you know, and I'm not exactly sure what, you know, what got Leon, but, you know, he was able to get back up and seemed to be okay, and he was able to fight through it. You know, there again, that's another situation where you could say, I'm going to err on the side of, I'm going to get him out because he got dinged up. And so
that's why I asked you the question. That's why I wanted to ask you the question. That's just very telling to me right there.
Well, is it
about Alfonso, right?
Yeah, no, I understand. Is it telling, or is it, because I think when the two linemen went down, I think those were some of the last injuries. Vogler may still have gotten dinged up, and they talked about, you know, Fowler getting a stinger, and I think they made a bigger deal of that than maybe they could have. But, you know, there had been a number of injuries, you know, by the time the two linemen went down. And when they both went down, you know, there was a part of me that's like, well, you know, are we just snake bit on this? And so if you react to, I've got to bring two linemen in here and you know, these guys aren't going to play, and do you demonstrate that we're snake bit by this to the team? Or do you say he's good enough to play, he's going to keep playing, and you try not to make a thing of it? I don't know. I don't know if I'm sort of over breaking it down in the wrong way, but, you know, if he was good to go, he's good to go, and you leave him out there. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'll flip back to defense now. Many game ball. You know, just in the pure spirit of mini game ball, I think I want to break that ball in half. And I've already you know, gave it away, but I want to give half of that to D-Liner, and I want to give the other half to Josh Frazier. D-Liner gets the first half of it, the bigger half, because I didn't cut it quite perfectly in half like I should have. D-Liner gets that bigger half, man, because, you know, he lost his red shirt last year for a couple football plays. And so I like the kid getting to get out in this football game, and I like seeing the kid Josh Frazier, And I like this youth getting some opportunities to make some plays.
Yes, I agree with that. And I'm going to kind of stick with the defensive line theme, and I'm going to go Jonathan Allen with my mini game ball. There's not, you know, his stat line wasn't spectacular, but when he was on the field, he was just a ball of hustle, disrupting the line, disrupting the backfield. And he is one of those, you know, linemen that we've brought in that more of the speed lineman, more of, you know, attack the quarterback you know, apply the pressure, a little more speed, a little different than what you get from, you know, the big centers or the big nose guards that we've had. He's sort of the special breed of defensive end that we've been playing, and he seemed to demonstrate a significant amount of hustle each of the last several weeks, and he just flashed for me a couple times, and so I thought, well, that's, you know, I like what he represents. I'm going to give him the mini game ball here, and I'm excited about what he can do against this Auburn team. So my mini game ball is Jonathan Allen.
All right, man. Well, talk to me about special teams, man. We got to see some more punter love there, man.
You know, what's awesome is we got to see my boy PK, but he didn't punt. Zero punts. He had 9 kickoffs. You know, 1 went out of bounds. He had 4 touchbacks, though. I think that, you know, he was getting some run. And, you know, in Adam Griffith's defense, you know, he was held out for injury, and it had been, at least in what I've been tracking, it had been undisclosed what his injury was, but it seems like it came out that he had a back injury. And so, in my estimation, geez, you know, as a kicker and you've got, you know, back troubles, that, you know, that's, I could see where you, every time you wound up to kick the ball, you know, you'd expect some excruciating pain, and I could see where that would be a distraction. So hopefully he's going to bounce back from that. You know, back injuries are, you know, once you have them, you seem to always have them. So I hope that he's able to rebound from that. But it's good to see PK get some, put that leg to use with some kickoff returns. And Gunnar Rayborn, he was 2 of 3 at the field goal duties. What'd you think about him?
Well, I was going to ask you, man, I'm surprised that he was out there. I mean, don't you think you should have had PK in that situation? I mean, what if you find out that Adam can't come back next week? You know, they purposely, you know, they had the true freshman, you know, attempting 28 yards and 31 yards was his longest one. But you're not going to see Gunnar Rayborn attempt a 48 yarder in the Auburn game, are you? And if Adam Griffith can't go, I mean, shouldn't PK been taking some of these field goals?
Well, you know, it makes you wonder, are we, and, you know, and this is just pure speculation, but what would we have done had it been a 40-yarder? Would we have let Gunnar kick that, or would we have gone with PK? Was the game plan to have a short kicker and a long kicker, and we just didn't need to use the long kicker? I don't know. You know, to your point, should we have at least gotten him a kick? Well, you know, you can reason either side of that. But if your game plan was to go with a short one and a long one, and that's going to be your plan, then, you know, executing to that plan, I think is probably appropriate.
Well, that's a good point that you make, because we were sitting there in the first quarter when Blake Sims got intercepted. We were at the 29-yard line. And as I look at the stat sheet and look at where we ended our drives, that was probably the only time that we would have seen a 40-something yard field goal. So in the first quarter, we you know, that would have been a time for us to see if that could have happened. Right. Anything else jumped out at you? What'd you think about Reuben Foster? He was able to get up and walk off the field.
He was, but he didn't look right doing it. And you know, of course, he's on the list of injury reports. You know, and what's funny is you know, they spotlighted him. They had, you know, I guess the producer said, put a camera on this guy because he blows people up on special teams, and he sure does. But then, you know, he hobbles to the sideline or wobbles to the sideline.
Oh, man, he did not look right coming to the sideline at all.
No, he didn't. And I hate to say it, and, you know, and I hope that I'm wrong. I hope you're right about this kid, but I think he's going to keep this up, and he's going to have to give up the game. And you know, you're thinking if he can, you know, turn the corner that he'll be, you know, a stud linebacker. I'd, I don't know. I don't know that I see that, even if he's not getting dinged up on special teams. But if he's going to continue to get dinged up this way on special teams, you know, and have these neck injuries and you know, knock himself out of practice, that just speaks to, you know, concussions and repeated concussions and long-term impacts and, you know, hurting your neck when you tackle. That just speaks – that starts down a path that it's hard to come back from. And oh, sure. he's either got to fix it, and you know, because we heard Saban even during, you know, spring practice when he's mic'd up, you know, you got to look at what you hit. You can't lower your head, and you know, that's something that we, you know, we saw even during spring practice. And so, the, you know, as he continues to do that, you know, we'll see. And I'm not rooting for it, and I'm not, you know, I'm hoping that I'm sure. openly hoping I'm wrong. But, boy, I just see those dots connect. You watch enough football and you see enough things over the years like we have, and you just see, man, this is trending in a way that I don't feel good about. And that's what I say, or that's what I see when I look at Reuben Foster. So, you know, like I said, hopefully I'm wrong there.
Well, hey, man, are we gonna make some calls? I mean, we know some guys on the Georgia coaching staff. Do we need to make some calls and ask them what they did to kick Auburn's tail like they did 2 weeks ago?
You know, that's
I want that's their blueprint, right?
Well, you know, I think that you know, you make a good point, right? Because Jeremy Pruitt's over there running their offense and or their defense rather, and you'd have to think that, you know, you teach what you know, and he knows our defense. And so, you know, you wonder if we don't look at that and say, well, you know, here's how they modeled their version of our defense to stop Auburn. Here's how we're stopping these running quarterbacks and these running teams. What can we blend together across the two? And, you know, even though we had a game this week, you know, the coaching staff has had, and you think of the defensive GAs, you know, they've had 2 weeks to sort of dissect and excruciating detail, you know, how Georgia using, again, sort of our template, our defense template, how they use that to slow down Auburn. So, yeah, you'd like to think that there's some carryover there. Now, whether or not they have a phone conversation, I don't know. But and I would actually say probably not. You know,
I was kidding about the phone call, but, man, I mean, they literally, you know, Auburn rushed the ball 35 times, and they got 150 yards. But the biggest thing that I noticed is Georgia was able to, you know, put them in third and longs. And, you know, this is not a Georgia podcast, but my point of bringing this game up is when Nick Marshall got in an obvious third and long, they did a conservative play call and punted the ball. They didn't gamble on third and 20. They weren't going for the first down when it was too far. If when it was out of reach, they're like, okay, we're done.
Well, it's like you said against Dak, you know, let's make him pass the ball. Let's make him one-dimensional, and let's make his dimension passing, which is not, you know, his strong suit. And, you know, Nick Marshall, you could argue, is maybe a better passer than Dak. I don't know. But if we can take away his running game and make him one-dimensional, the lesser of his dimensions is passing the ball. So, you know, hopefully there's an opportunity to do that. And if we can stick with our receivers, and this is the thing that's frustrating, you know, when you watch Auburn, if you can stick with their receivers down the field, because they'll run, and then they'll just bomb. They'll just play, and then they'll just, you know, throw nine routes. And, man, if you can just stick with the receivers down the field and watch the ball and bat the ball away, you know, I think you can take away their deep threat, but, you know, you got to do it. And so I guess that remains to be seen. But, yeah, I think it's a good point. I think that we're going to kind of look at, well, how did they deploy sort of their version of our defense? Again, Jeremy Pruitt, right? And so how do we learn from that and redeploy it ourselves? So that'll be fun to watch. What kind of prediction do you have?
I'd love to see the 49-0 repeat from 2 years ago, but you know that's not going to happen. You know, last year was pretty frustrating because in the second half, it seemed like it was an outscore. You know, who's going to outscore who? And in the second half, it was like whoever's going to have the ball last is going to win the ball game. I do think these guys have seen that stupid, you know, that stupid play at the end of that game a gazillion times. I bet you they've got it on the TVs in the locker room running continuous. I think they've crammed it down their throats. You know, my biggest concern is injuries. I'm just concerned with some of these guys being banged up. I'd feel a lot better if we were going in healthy. But I think we're going to want to, I think we're going to, you know, we're at home, which is good. And I think we're going to want to get the taste of that game last year out of our mouth. You know, I see something like a 28-13 game. I think we're going to win by double digits. And we're not going to kick field goals because we won't have a field goal kicker. I think they get one touchdown and two field goals, and that's your final score.
Okay. You know, I could see a 24-14, 24-13, that kind of ball game. I think that we're going to want to come out and be aggressive with the ball early. And I think that
and run the ball
better suited and run the ball early, you know, and sort of lure them into the play action. If we come out, you know, striking the ball down the field, which we have done a number of times this season, sometimes with success, sometimes with not, I think their DBs come into the game expecting that. And, you know, you sort of lose some advantage when you do that. And so I think that we would be better suited to run the ball, frustrate their offense because they're spending time on the bench, wear out their defense, because guess what? We can have a multiplier effect in wearing out their defense. Their offense is quick, which means they're either going to score quickly or they're going to go three and out quickly. And if their offense is putting their defense on the field so often, well, why don't we exacerbate that by running the ball and keeping them out there? If you're going to keep putting them out there, we're going to keep them out here, you know, while they're here. And I think that if we went in with sort of that game plan, then I think that we can move the ball against this team. You know, just like Auburn, just like Saban said against LSU, we can move the ball on the ground against this team. Well, guess what? LSU is a better defense than Auburn is. And so if we think we can move the ball on the ground against LSU, then we sure as hell can move the ball on the ground against Auburn. And if we do that and just wear out that defense, it could get, have a much larger score differential in the second half if we're able to wear them down. I don't know that we'll do that. I don't know that we'll go with that game plan because we've not seen us do it all year. And so I'm going into this game a little bit frustrated because we're not going to play it the way I'd like to play it. But I guess that's where I come up with, similar to what you're doing, maybe a tighter score than what I would want it to be, 24-14 kind of ball game. You know, we should run the ball more.
that's the theme of
next week's show.
Well, I'm going to tell you, man, I think that we need to do to them what LSU did to us.
Yeah.
LSU had 53 carries. Georgia had 52 rushes against Auburn. Out of 71 plays, Georgia rushed 52 times. Their quarterback was 10 of 19, big deal. They didn't care because they rushed 52 times for 289 yards. We need to carry the rock 50 freaking times in this ball game.
Right. And you know that Georgia's going to do that. So it's not like, oh, they lined up and they caught us. No, Georgia's going to run the ball. That's what they do. And so you think, well, Auburn, if Auburn can gear up to stop the run, they would have already geared up to stop the run. And the fact that they got gashed against Georgia is not so much that they didn't plan for the run, it's they can't stop it. They cannot stop it. And so if we line up, to your point, and force feed the ball down their throat, you know, 50 times, and here's what's ironic, right? We will score more points doing that than if we pass the ball, you know, 30 times.
Because we'll gash one for 30, 40 yards. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And we'll just continually move the ball. And then that'll put their offense, I think, in a bind. And then we can go nickel and dime on defense. And I think have a little more success, stopping them. And so we can dictate how they play offense by how we play offense, because their defense is you know, would just be a sieve. And so if we just, if we can force feed them the ball, we'll score in the 30s. You know, that would get us up into the 30s, I think, pretty easily. You know, I could envision a 35 to 7 type ball game, even, you know, maybe 30, maybe 13. But, you know, in that situation, I see where we could control the ball, control the day. We rack up 35 and we just out physical them up and down the field. I could absolutely see that if we would run out that type of formation. And I wonder if, you know, in the office in Tuscaloosa, even if we record this, if Saban and Kiffin aren't having the same conversation.
Well, I think that's the biggest difference in this Auburn team, right, from last year, is they're just not as good against the run as they were even last year. And right. I hope that Nick Saban, you know, kind of trumps Kiffin a little bit in this ball game and says, no, this is going to be our game plan in this ball game, and this is what we're going to do.
Yep. I certainly hope so. And you know, if that gives us an opportunity to use Cooper as a decoy and maybe give him, you know, he might be out there running a couple of routes, but giving him maybe a little bit more rest, you know, for what we have ahead, you know, I think that would be a good strategy as well. And then if you want to, if you think about Cam Robinson and his knee, you know, hey, Dominic Jackson is a powerful drive blocker. And, you know, you could put some guys out there that can be powerful drive blockers, even if they're not the best in pass protection. Hell, if we're going to run the ball 50 times, then I don't mind tipping our hand in that way either. We're going to put our bruisers up at the line. And
we're just showing you what we're going to do. Yep. Try to stop.
Stop it. So
no, I look forward to it. I'd like to see some 8, 9, 10 minute drives in this ball game. And I'd like to see us really take the air out of the football and say, Blake Sims, we don't need you to complete but 10 or 15 passes in this ball game.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we talk about, you know, looking at what Georgia did on defense, but my gosh, if we overlook what they did on offense, then that would just be foolish. That would just be foolish because, you know, you could say that we've got a better quarterback than what Georgia has, and we should be able to line up and run the ball, not too dissimilarly, but then we can do some play action over on top of that. If we'll come out with that game plan, I think we'd have good success against these guys. Any other thoughts you have, you know, kind of wrapping up Western Carolina and the comments that we've had about Auburn?
No, man, I'm just ready to get this game going. Is it Saturday yet?
Well, you know, it's ice tub time and physical therapy time, and so let's give those guys all the time that they need for that. I kind of kidded before, if we've got the athletic department riding the kids to class on golf carts, I'm fine with that too. I just want to see everyone healthy and ready to go against Auburn. And I think the emotion that we lacked against Western Carolina, I mean, after the emotion of LSU, the emotion of Mississippi State, knowing that Auburn's coming, knowing that the SEC, knowing what could potentially even exist beyond that, I'm not surprised that we've had a little bit of letdown. I don't think it means anything. But, boy, I think we're going to have some emotion, and I'm glad this game's in Bryant-Denny. It should be a good one.
Absolutely, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I've got one other note, and I'm away from my iTunes at home, and so if we've gotten some reviews, we'll get to those in the next show. So if you haven't left a review, get out there and do that, and we'll give you a shout-out next week in the Iron Bowl show. But I want to give just a tip of the hat to old D. Hart that's playing out of Colorado State. He put up 6 touchdowns in a rout against New Mexico. He had over 230 yards rushing. So glad to see D. Hart and Jim McElwain having some success out there at Colorado State. So that's give a little tip of the hat to those guys.
No, absolutely, man. That is good for him that he had that type of a game. That's awesome.
Absolutely. So that's another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, powered by Bama Hammer. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.